I keep pondering that very thin line between anticipation and expectation, and how much better my life is when I don't let myself cross that line. My spiritual discipline regarding anticipation, seems to me, is to maintain a feeling of anticipation, excitement and eagerness about the potential for something to happen, yet not become attached to an expectation that it will happen, let alone happen in a specific way if it does come to pass. Anticipation can so easily morph into grasping and being attached to outcomes. And when that happens, I'm no longer present in the here and now of my own life. I'm living with thoughts and emotions based on should have been past, should be future, versus experiencing what actually is now. I've got to remember the open part of our Unitarian Universalist call to listen, open, serve. When we're harboring expectations, we basically become too full of ourselves to receive the gifts that are being offered us by others, or to recognize opportunities for us to gift others, whom we understand may not be able to recognize as gifts if they themselves are harboring expectations. I can think of loads of times when having set expectations instead of a wide open sense of anticipation led me to miss out on opportunities to truly enjoy being fully alive. And conversely, when going with the flow led to unanticipated joys, such as when I was a kid, you know, putting on our bathing suits to dance in the downpour and play in the puddles, instead of pouting on the front porch because the plans we had for a picnic and swimming at our Aunt Jean's were rained out. The question then for us to wrestle with is, how do we live a life of anticipation in which we're consistently open to and hungry for whatever deliciousness life may have to offer us?
From an old folktale. Once long ago, a pilgrim set out in search of gardens where peace, joy, and love grew. What he found was not always that. He passed through the wild forests of war and conflict, poverty and strife, all the while observing the people and wondering at them. For as the people waited for peace, they prepared for war. As they waited for love, they surrounded themselves with mistrust. As they waited for all life had to offer, they prepared themselves for death. And the pilgrim wondered, what are we waiting for? One of the great questions of life, I think. What are we waiting for? And we'll return to our pilgrim later, but let's consider his question. When will we solve that problem? What are we waiting for? When will we take that risk? What are we waiting for? When will we begin doing that thing that we have yet to do? It seems like we're always waiting for something. For the next paycheck, for that person to act right, for the kitchen to get remodeled so the dog that we haven't gotten yet will have somewhere to stay so that we can take that job with the longer hours but better pay so that we can have that baby and hopefully still have time to take that class so we can get that better job so we can have money enough to retire. It's easy to wait for a whole bunch of specific things to happen to try and plan out our lives that way, a kind of perpetual anticipation. In the score for A Little Night Music, Stephen Sondheim says that perpetual anticipation can be good for the soul, but bad for the heart. I take it one step further. Well, I agree that a certain kind of perpetual anticipation can be good for the soul. When anticipation resides in the heart as the product of all of our conscious longings and wishes, then it is no longer anticipation at all. It becomes expectation. Reverend Karen Packard says, expectation is believing that something will happen in a specific way. Anticipation is about excitement, eagerness. It is about believing in the potential for something good to happen, but not being attached to a certain outcome. Now, most of us have been on this planet long enough to know that life rarely works out the way we expect, and that can be painful. Whereas anticipation can be a joyful spiritual discipline if we are only willing to open ourselves up to it. I remember back in junior high school taking a written test. This was be on the computer now, but we filled out the little bubbles on the sheet. And this was designed to show you what career you were best suited for. You filled out 100 or so questions and then using an answer key tallied up the results so the test told you the top 3 careers you were suited for. So at the time, I planned on being a writer or an actor or both. And I excitedly added up the score for the test, and there were my top 3 careers listed in order. Number 3, actor. Number 2, writer. Number 1, minister. Never, I remember thinking. So since this was a self-scoring test, I went back and I changed a few answers. I must have answered this one wrong, I thought. Oh, and this one surely should have been answered this way. I scored myself again. Number 3, writer. Number 2, actor. Number 1, minister. Again, back to the drawing board. I thought, it's this question that's been tripping me up. I'll answer it this way, and then we'll see. Number 3, writer. Number 2, teacher. Number 1, minister. This worst combination yet? This test is broken. I told the person next to me, who looked pretty happy with her results. You see, my heart had decided that there were certain things for me in life that I should do. But deep down in my soul, for want of a better name, there were other things I was even more suited for. I was too busy living from a place of expectation rather than anticipation to be open to other possibilities. I'm sure I'm not alone in this, right? I had a friend named Henry. He'd graduated from Harvard, smart as anything, and he had a gift, gardening. It seemed that anything could grow when Henry was around, and just being with him out in his garden, he was at his most relaxed. If I had the courage, he'd say, I'd do this all the time. He was then unemployed, so to me, it seemed like an easy move. Just do it, I'd say. This is where you're happiest. But he'd always talk about those expectations his family and friends had for him, not to mention the expectations he had for himself. He graduated from Harvard, after all, so he was supposed to do something with a certain kind of prestige, whatever that means. He wasn't supposed to garden. Now, Henry's been very successful in his prestige career. But I've always wondered what might have come if he looked to life with anticipation rather than expectation, meeting it with openness and possibility. What was he waiting for? So finally, that pilgrim, after passing through so many landscapes marked by hate and destruction, arrived at a peaceful village. He saw a shop window and went inside. What would you like? Asked the shopkeeper. What do you have to offer? Asked the pilgrim. We have that which you most desire, said the shopkeeper. Just name it. The pilgrim could barely contain his excitement. I want peace, he said. Peace for my family and the world. I want to find meaning in life. I want the lonely to have friends, the sick to be well, the hungry to be full. I want freedom for everyone. The shopkeeper thought for a moment. My, you expect many things, he said at last. Many of us have a long list of expectations, just like that pilgrim. We want to stand at a counter and order what we expect, figuring there is no point in ordering something that's not on the menu in front of us. This is an old human hang-up. Rabbi Manny Friedman writes about the story of Adam and Eve. We know the story. We think we do, right? God puts Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden and tells them they can eat anything except the fruit from one tree. And within an hour of these explicit instructions, they both eat from the tree and are cast out of the garden forever into a world of difficulty, challenge, and pain. But Rabbi Friedman suggests there's a better way of interpreting the story. The idea that Adam and Eve didn't arbitrarily disobey God. Rather, they made a choice to partake in the forbidden fruit, knowing it would take them out of paradise, but into someplace richer that would acquaint them with pain, hard work, and even enemies. But this would also open them up to being in a place where they could do meaningful work. The Garden of Eden was all about expectation. They knew what to expect, but the wider world is a place of anticipation. For with all the struggle, there can be great joy if we only open ourselves up to it. The Garden of Eden, as a story about anticipation, invites in other possibilities not available if it's just a story about expectation. What might happen, both bad and good, if the fruit is eaten? What might happen if things change? What might happen if we are positioned in a different way in the world? This morning, some of our youth bridged. My hope for them is that they live their lives mostly free of the burdens of expectation. Not responsibility, not accountability, but expectation. But with anticipation instead, opening themselves up to what life may bring their way. Let me tell you about another young person named Megan Phelps Roper. Now, you may not know who she is, but you probably know her family. The Phelps family constitutes the Westboro Baptist Church, that small Kansas sect that has been protesting with their God hates signs for decades now. According to Westboro Baptist, God hates a lot of people, gays, Jews, the military, etc. They're angry and strident, an easy group to hate right back. Now, Megan was born into that family, and until recently, she was right there at the forefront of those protests, spouting off the same kind of condemnation as everyone else. But as Megan tells it now, she was taught to have all kinds of specific expectations for the world, that it was evil, that people needed to be told what was wrong with them, and that it was her family's job to do it. And the family expected that they would be hated and persecuted along the way. But what Megan didn't expect was that when she took over the church's Twitter account, people would begin to actively seek her out to ask questions of her, to show curiosity about her life. And she quickly learned that the 140-word limit meant I had to drop the throwaway insults or conversations would die. And she was trying to stay engaged with people. Over time, I found I was actually beginning to like people, to see them as human beings rather than people to condemn. For the first time, I started to care about what other people thought of me. It was when the idea of expectations was dropped, both for Megan and those who chose to engage with her. It was then that their interactions were approached with anticipation for what could be. And that's when real connection took place. My friends on Twitter didn't abandon their beliefs or their principles, Megan says, only their scorn. They channeled their infinitely justifiable offense and came to me with pointed questions tempered with kindness and humor. And in time, because of those conversations, because of the real friendships that developed, Megan decided to leave the Westboro Baptist Church and her family. And now she says, I remember feeling like we were a persecuted minority, triumphant in the face of evil people, worshiping the dead as we picketed funerals or rejoiced at the destruction of the Twin Towers. But beside that memory is the one where I weep, thinking how callous and unmerciful I was to so many people who just lost a son or a daughter. I'm ashamed of that now. Megan now works with the very people she used to despise, and she has concerns. We celebrate tolerance and diversity more than at any other time in memory, she says, and still we grow more and more divided. The path we've chosen looks so much like the one I walked away from 4 years ago. We've broken the world into us and them, only emerging from our bunkers long enough to lob rhetorical grenades at the other camp. We write off half the country as out-of-touch liberal elites or racist misogynist bullies. No nuance, no complexity, no humanity. This path has brought us cruel sniping, deepening polarization, and even outbreaks of violence. I remember this path. It will not take us where we want to go. What she's talking about is this idea of expectation. We have expectations for who people are, what they're capable of, and the same goes for our expectations of ourselves, right? But what if we begin to frame our lives through anticipation? Anticipation of possibility, eagerness to get to know others beyond talking points. Anticipation taps into our potential, reveals unexpected gifts. Theologian Gerald May reminds us that grace, unexpected gifts, fills an empty cup rather than a full one. When we are focused on results, on meeting expectations, our cup is too full to take in what surprises might be available to us. Our lives are meant to be filled with possibilities, with surprises. Unitarian Universalists are called to be open in this way, though it sometimes doesn't feel like it. We represent a very intelligent faith group. Lots of well-read people who don't shy away from a good debate. We tend to fill our cups to the brim since being knowledgeable is all part of the responsibility our tradition calls us to. But there's another side to it. The side of openness. The side of inclusivity. The side of listening. These are part of our tradition too. And until we can live comfortably in that space of ambiguity, able to be in as much relationship with what we don't know as with what we do know, then we lose out on some possibilities for ourselves and our community. So we last left the pilgrim and the shopkeeper standing face to face. The pilgrim has recited his shopping list full of so much he wanted, a veritable garden of peace, love, and justice. I want so much, said the pilgrim. I want this world to be a place made out of love. If you have anything my heart desires, he said desperately, if that is so, can you give me what I ask? There was a pause. And then the shopkeeper said at last, I'm sorry. I should have explained. We don't supply the fruits here. We only supply the seeds. That's true here at UUCF. We plant a garden, but we only plant the seeds. Some of the seeds will take hold and some won't. And even with the best laid garden plans, an ash tree or melon vine may spring up where you least expect it. Do we anticipate the miracle of life in all its possibility, or do we try and map out each moment of it? I believe faith is that soul-enriching place where anticipation and possibility meet. That place where the seeds are sown, but we don't quite know what the garden will look like. A place where not knowing is okay, because all possibility is ahead. Good possibility, bad possibility, but all a part of life in its eternal richness. A garden will bloom and change, adapt to the seasons, grow and fill the world with its life, color, and vibrance. My hope, I anticipate that we can do the same.